Life Experienced will begin right after this. Life is made up of experiences. Experiences shape our perspectives and allow us to pass along knowledge. In this podcast, I sit down with listeners like you and find out that no matter who you are, everyone has a story to tell. I'm Ethan Smith, and this is Life Experienced. Last week, I talked to Preston Durrell, a teaching professor in the Department of Chemical Engineering at Virginia Tech. We discussed some of his own educational experiences growing up and his experiences teaching chemistry at Radford University. Upon retiring from Radford in 2003, Preston and his wife moved to Blacksburg, and it wasn't long before another teaching opportunity presented itself. What motivated you to retire? What kinds of things were you considering at the time?
Well, 2003, I was 67, so I was beyond the 65 age, and they had a buyout at Radford, and they wanted, of course, to get newer, younger faculty, which I certainly agree with. And so my friends and family convinced me to take the buyout, although I was somewhat reluctant. And about the same time that I took the buyout, my wife continued to teach and to work over there. We had always wanted to live in Blacksburg, so we moved to Blacksburg. And that 2003 year was pretty much dominated by our moving. But then in 2004, I just happened to talk to some people here at Virginia Tech and found out they maybe needed some help part-time in chemistry and chemical engineering. So I kind of jumped at that opportunity.
Yeah, because I was going to say, retire in 2003, but here we are sitting in your office on campus at Virginia Tech. So clearly the academic world was still calling out to you in some way.
Oh, I've really loved teaching at Virginia Tech, and I would do it again in a minute. But I knew that I could never make it as a researcher at Virginia Tech. I just wasn't strong enough to do that. But teaching, I felt that I could do a respectable job. That's what I was interested in, and that's, in fact, what they wanted me to do, teaching and advising. So it seemed like it was just tailor-made, and I've really appreciated the opportunity to do this.
And so now in your teaching role, you mostly work with the students who are just starting into the chemical engineering program.
Yeah,
right?
I teach mass and energy balances. I've been doing that now since 2004 or 2005, I can't remember exactly. And then I have done the unit operations lab one session every summer since 1983, or since 85. I actually came over here in the summer of 83 and 84 and taught mass and energy balances in the summer. It was taught in the summer then. And then starting 85 and for every summer since 85, I've taught one session of UO lab. So I get to see the students early in their program and then towards the latter part of their program.
Despite having no initial intentions of becoming an educator, Preston's approach has been well received by the majority of undergraduate students that I've spoken to. Preston said he attempts to do the same things for his students now that his teachers and professors did for him, and it all starts with encouragement. So you mentioned that back when you were in college, you had a lot of support from graduate students, faculty, and people that you met. I've heard a lot from the students who've had you as a professor, and they say that a lot of times that you take extra time to encourage students to do their best. And so I was just wondering about if that's motivated by your educational experience and why that you continue to do that now.
Well, this is what my high school teachers in English and math and languages did for me. They encouraged me to change my way of doing things, become a serious student, maybe even go to college. And I I'll never forget that. But then when I got to college, I found that my college faculty did the same thing. For example, I remember when my advisor, who at the time was a nuclear engineer, because I think the chemical engineering program and the nuclear engineering program were kind of associated then. He didn't need to do this, but he, one time in his office, said, you know, you need to improve your social skills. And I was afraid to get up in front of a group. I just didn't like that at all. And so he said, you ought to take public speaking. Well, that's the last thing I wanted to do. And he even said, you know, if you take public speaking, I'll make sure you don't have to take second semester PChem lab. Well, I'd heard about that, second semester PChem lab. So I said, well, let's give it a shot. And so I took the public speaking, and it did help me some. But, you know, for an advisor who's also a major researcher, and all the advisors were major researchers, that meant quite a lot to me. And just the general way I was treated by faculty made me feel much more competent than I probably was. So I believe in encouraging people, for sure.
I have been told that that the chemical engineering graduating classes would be a lot smaller if not for you. What would you say to that?
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I've probably done my share of, keeping the numbers down, because a lot of students do, in fact, quit after mass and energy balances. And a lot of times it's not because they can't do it or didn't do a good job. It's because they just are not interested in it. So somehow I need to make it more interesting, and I haven't been successful in that.
Fall 2018 will be Preston's last semester as a teaching professor at Virginia Tech. When I asked him about this decision, here's what he had to say.
So any plans to stop teaching? Any plans to retire?
Well, I'm not going to be teaching after this this semester, but if they ever needed any help with something like UO Lab, say someone's going to be gone for a week or something like that, I could help with that. And I'll continue seeing people from Tech and from Radford, people I know. But you reach a point where your mind is just not as sharp as it should be, and you're not comfortable doing things that you used to do. I have arthritis in my hands, but I think it also kind of is like arthritis in your mind. It's got to be a little bit more nimble than it is right now. So
what do you think you'll do to fill the gaps? What are you going to do
instead? Oh, I've got plenty to do. I mean, I like to read. I love to work out in the yard. I like to do things like shovel snow, mow the grass, routine things that don't require a lot of thought. So I'm going to be doing a good bit of that.
Throughout our conversation, Preston mentioned several other interesting stories from his life. He reflected fondly on several memories from graduate school and talked about the changing technology he's witnessed during his many years in education.
One interesting thing is when I came to Blacksburg, there was no housing in town for graduate students. The university club was always filled. So I stayed in a basement room in town, basement of a house that was owned by a family. And I paid $26 a month, and that included my phone. And if it hadn't been for the family I lived with, I'm sure I would not have graduated with my PhD, because talk about encouragement. They provided it. But when I moved in, the children were 2, 6, and 10. And of course now they're old, but I've kept up with them over all these years. And I recall that I seldom had to buy a meal while I was a graduate student, because a lot of my friends were married And of course, they'd invite me over for dinner. And I always took advantage of that. And the kids often wouldn't eat what their parents fixed for them to eat. So they'd always invite me up to dinner. And so it was quite a good experience. But at any rate, one thing I learned is about how things get around in a small town. Like one time I was kidding with the children, and I said that in order to save money, what I did was to squirt Raid into the toilet bowl and stir it up, and I used it for aftershave lotion. Before long, this apparently got around in the small town of Blacksburg, and people thought I was crazy. I did learn something about, small communities mm-hmm. compared with large cities. Could have said that in Chicago or Baton Rouge, but Blacksburg, news travels.
Yeah. What's your take on how the technology has changed over the years?
And completely different world. I mean, the first calculator I saw, a friend in biology at Radford had bought the calculator. And basically, it added, subtracted, multiplied, and divided. There were no functions, as I recall. And he paid about $600 for it. And in 2 or 3 years, the price was down to like $100. Now, it's one of the ones you can get for $5. So technology has been just, in a stage of rapid development. I used to spend forever typing because I didn't know how to type. And, a lot of classes weren't tolerant of errors. And so I'd spend more time typing than I did thinking. Now with word processors, it's a tremendous time saver. We solved certain problems by trial and error. You didn't have solvers back then. The first solver I ever saw was TK Solver. And I guess that was back in the 60s or maybe a little bit later. But technology has certainly been a tremendous asset to engineers. I haven't kept up with technology like I should. I'm embarrassed to say. Now, my wife has, because that's kind of what she went into after she graduated. She just kind of picked it up on her own. And she was director of Resources Center at Radford, which, mainly was, computer operations.
Maybe I should have her in here to interview sometime. That sounds interesting.
Well, the problem with that is I relied on her and on our son, who's a computer engineer, rather than trying to learn these things myself. There's always a tendency to do that. And now I kind of regret that I didn't try to figure those things out myself, but that's the way it goes.
I guess you've still got time, right?
Yeah.
Still learning.
As a final note, I asked Preston for his advice to current and aspiring college students. Here's what he had to say.
Based on your experience teaching over the years, what kind of just general advice do you have for students today?
Well, I think the best advice is just don't get discouraged, because there were times when, my future looked pretty bleak, as in physics. But if you just hang in there, keep plugging, things tend to work out. And overall, I think, probably I got strengthened by some of these what you might call disappointments. So, to me, chemical engineering was not an easy academic choice. I mean, the courses were very challenging, even then, more challenging now. And you just got to, wade right in there and keep working. And it'll all eventually come out okay. I try to convince the students to do that when they have real bad test two, the test that covers material balances. not the end of the world. Just seems like it.
Preston will leave a legacy of hard work, friendliness, and encouragement as he retires from Virginia Tech this winter. My hope is that his story will resonate with those whose lives he has impacted and perhaps even inspire a new generation of educators. Life Experienced is hosted and produced by Ethan D. Smith and is primarily distributed via DSound, a decentralized audio sharing platform built on the Steam blockchain. For more information, visit dsound.audio. The music in this podcast is composed by Lee Rosevere and used under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. For more information, visit freemusicarchive.org. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you like the podcast, be sure to share it with others. If you have an interesting experience that you want to share, please let me know by tweeting at Ethan D. Smith or visiting ethandsmith.com. And of course, I've saved my personal favorite story for last, so for those of you still here, here's the tale of Preston's childhood gambling habit.
Well, I can't help but go back to the fact that you said you had a gambling habit as a child. So if you could elaborate on that, that would be lovely.
This is an interesting story. My grandfather was a very successful business person, but he did gamble primarily on the horses. And I think he was relatively successful. I think he probably won more than he lost. But when I lived with him in Chicago, we lived in a hotel. And in Illinois, minors could go to the racetrack. Of course, you couldn't bet, but you actually could go to the racetrack. So I'd go to the racetrack with my grandmother also liked to play the horses. We'd go to Arlington Park or Washington Park, Hawthorne Sportsman. I remember them like they're still there. And what I would do, since I couldn't bet, I learned very quickly that if there was an inquiry on the board, which could lead to a disqualification, a lot of people would have thrown away their tickets, which could become winning tickets. A lot of people didn't know that if you bet a horse to place and it didn't come second, they thought you didn't get your money. Of course, if it comes first or second, you get your money. And so I learned just to pick up tickets, and then I'd get back home to the hotel, and after I got the racing form that night, I'd always go down at night to the hotel and get the racing form from my grandfather. I'd check those tickets, and I'd make maybe $10, $20 a week just on tickets that were thrown away. And so my grandfather, to get me interested in reading and math, encouraged me to make bets. So finally, his bookie, he had a bookie, so he did some betting off track, would take 50-cent bets from me. And he'd actually send me an accounting. So I made a lot of these 50-cent bets, and I actually, overall, as I recall now, ended up making money. So all through college, I never went to a racetrack. But after I finished my last exams my senior year, which was 1957, I decided I'd go out to Suffolk Downs, which was near Boston. So I went out, didn't have much money in my pocket, but after I paid admission, I had a little bit of money, so I bet a few races. I won the Daily Double, won a few races, came home with a couple $100 profit. Now, remember, back in those days, $2,000 was my whole year's tuition and fees, so that was substantial money. So I talked to one of my friends about it. He was also a chemical engineer and planning to go into nuclear engineering. And so we went out to the track a couple times before graduation, and we won probably about $500 apiece. I still remember we had this Daily Double where we had booked a horse in the first race with every horse in the second race. And the horse in the first race, his name was Power Plant. He won, paid 50-something. And the double that won didn't pay but several $100s. But at any rate, we did okay. So that fall, now we were both in nuclear engineering. So we decided we'd develop a system. So we, as best we could as engineers, we developed a system to pick the winners. And we played at Suffolk Downs during their season. And then we started going down to Providence, Rhode Island, to Lincoln Downs and Narragansett. We played there. And we probably won about, I'd say, maybe as much as a couple thousand apiece during the fall. Now, that was, again, a lot of money. When I left Baton Rouge, I was making like $550 a month or $500 a month. I mean, this was after that. So we took that money. Well, I was still, my grandparents still living in Florida. So our break was between semesters in January. So we decided we'd go down to Florida, stay at our house in Fort Lauderdale, and we'd go to Hialeah and just wipe them out because we had this like $4,000 to play with. Well, turns out we lost 26 races in a row without a horse in the money. If we picked them 1 through 12, you could almost be sure they'd finish in exactly the opposite order. I never gambled again. Now, I've been to horse races since then, and you know, I've made $2 bets. Mm-hmm. With the prospect of losing the $2, which I pretty much did. But my grandfather at the time, when he knew how successful we were at the New England tracks, he was actually afraid that he was going to be responsible for my developing this compulsive gambling habit. Some people do. And I think that this experience at Hialeah, probably the best thing that ever happened to me.
Why do you think you were so successful at the New England tracks?
No idea. I would say bottom line, luck, you know.
I guess there's always some aspect of that when it comes to gambling.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And once again, I'm Ethan Smith, reminding you to get out there and experience life. Over the past few months, my wife and I have been able to save some time and money and develop a whole new set of cooking skills. How did we do it? We started subscribing to EveryPlate. EveryPlate is a meal kit delivery service that's different from others you may have heard of because it only costs $5 per serving, which is about half as much as those other meal kits cost. Each meal features a recipe that's made from fresh ingredients and only takes about 30 minutes to make. The box of ingredients and recipe cards are delivered to your door each week, so all that's left for you to do is enjoy making the meals. If you'd also like to sharpen your cooking skills and enjoy recipes you want to make over and over, you can get $20 off your first box from EveryPlate by visiting lifeexperienced.org/everyplate. That's lifeexperienced.org/everyplate for $20 off your first delivery.